Okay, let's go.
Okay.
Okay. Hello and welcome to this 10th episode of the Provisional Nerf News Network podcast. I'm KT. I'm here with Jolt and Vile Mods. This is a very special episode. Not only is it our 10th episode, but we also just hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you, everybody, so much for your support. We'll be spending a little bit of time talking about a couple topics, and then we'll play our What's That Blaster game. That Grimms will be joining us partway through the podcast when we get around to that point, and then we'll be here for the Q&A that we're doing to celebrate 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. A bunch of you dropped questions on our community post on the YouTube channel. So thank you so much for your questions, and we're looking forward to answering them tonight. I also want to be consistent about saying this, because I haven't been. This is the companion podcast episode to episode 10 of our actual news show. If you haven't watched the news show, I strongly suggest making sure that you check that out before you listen, because some of this, well, actually, I say that, and then I realize this particular episode, that's not true. You can probably listen to this one, because we're not going to talk about any of the stuff in the show today. No, so now that I remember to say that, useless information. That's fine. Violent Jolt, how are you doing tonight?
We're doing good.
I'm tired.
Yes, same. But that's okay. I'm okay with being tired for right now. Sometimes it just be what it be. But yeah, like I said, there's a couple topics I want to touch on before we get into the Q&A, which I suspect will be the bulk of the episode tonight. And neither of these topics is actually in the show. We did talk about a lot of cool things in the show, but partly for time, I want to talk about a couple things that we didn't have time for there. Both of them related to Dart Zone. One of them is that Dart Zone released a video, I want to say 2 days ago now, which was, what's the actual title of it? It's purported to offer,
it's like the chronographs metrics and the accuracy testing.
Yeah,
for the
they bill it specifically.
I have it
as
right
chronograph.
Here. Yeah, it's
an accuracy testing.
Yep, of the Dark Zone in Pro Series MK4. Yep.
Oh, there you go. That's right. So I had Vile hadn't watched it up until right before we started filming, and I had him recording, and I had him watch up to the accuracy part, and I want to kind of get a reaction to the accuracy test here. But there have been a lot of thoughts on that video, and one of the things about it is, you know, this is supposed to be their new high-end blaster, and high-end, like, competitive primary class Springer. I feel like I say that so often on this podcast. And, you know, until now, we haven't seen any kind of performance measurements. So they chronograph it with all the different permutations of the barrels. The Mark IV, of course, comes with low power spring and high power spring, and there's an extension barrel that's supposed to work with the high power spring, and there is a scar barrel that's supposed to work with the low power spring, or I guess the high power spring, but not with the extension barrel, because it doesn't attach to the extension barrel for some reason. And they chronograph it with each setting, and the results, how would you interpret the results, Vile, having just watched it, or Jolt? I know you've watched it as well, of course.
I mean, it's, from what I remember, it was mostly like low hundreds, low spring, and then like 180s, basically high spring kind of, and then I don't remember exactly where it went, because it went up to like 200s, I think, once you kind of have the whole kit and caboodle on it. But
it does get over 200 with the extension barrel on.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I noticed is that the scar barrel created a lot of inconsistency.
Yeah.
Which in FPS, which feels like it's,
I think honestly, more the culprit there is the low power spring, and the thing being under-specced in general, because it's too big a plunger tube for too low a spring load.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's designed for that kind of spring. And actually, so there is one other video that just came out yesterday or today about the Mark IV, which is Captain Xavier. I know that Ryan Ri-Fi on TikTok and other places has one as well, and has been making content about it, but he's less of a, like, competitive.
Flux got one too.
Right, Flux has one, but neither of them. Flux is the type of nerfer, the type of creator to do metric tests, but I don't think has yet. But Ri-Fi has been doing videos and is not really that kind of creator. So I don't know if we're not really gonna be. I don't expect to see like chronograph readings out of him, which is fine. But Xavier's video is, I think, the first video that we've had independently giving numbers, and it's interesting that it came out right after the Dart Zone one. On his range where he shoots at the 25 and the 50 on his range. If anyone's not familiar with this content, he has this outdoor range with a 25-foot, 50-foot, and 75-foot targets. He gets really consistent results with pretty much every spring, even though like he really notes that the low power spring feels really anemic. So the numbers did seem to match. He had really good luck with accuracy, but at this point, I really want Vile to go ahead and watch the rest of the accuracy tests on the Dart Zone. And Joel, you've seen it, so you know what's going on.
I'm
gonna
be okay. laughing. But
go ahead and make your way through it. So first, they're gonna do the accuracy tests at 20 feet.
Yeah, this is the first one. It's at like timestamp 4 minutes and 13 seconds into their video. Yep. That's only barely under 6 minutes. So yep. I haven't seen it. I'm gonna go ahead and just hit play and watch it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
this first one is supposed to be the low powered spring at 20 foot.
So what they are doing though, they have the two. If he's holding the red blaster, it's the low power spring because
It's the blue. Okay, so it's high power.
It's all the high power spring.
Okay,
then.
So we're at the 20 foot for the high power.
Amazing, a 20 foot test,
which is a choice.
Yeah. Laughable for a blaster with that to test
180 to 200 foot blaster at 20 feet.
I mean, yeah, 20 foot's not a.
I feel I could throw the blaster and hit the target at 20 feet.
Yeah, it's kind of
practically.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it's funny because he had it with the scar on there, and then he changes it out and puts on the longer, you know, extension to the barrel, which should increase the performance up to like 220s.
Well, or not clear the barrel. I mean, I noticed that a lot in Xavier's video where he puts the extended barrel on with the weak spring. Honestly, this blaster just shouldn't. It just seems like. Again,
it's
I don't have it in
more.
Hand, right?
It's built for more.
It seems like it just shouldn't be used with the weak spring.
Right. I mean, we saw this with the Swift. Remember, there was a lot of people when the Swift first came out. It was built primarily for higher FPS, higher spring
loads. I have a Swift with the full spring set right now, and I can tell you it is real funky with the low power spring.
Yeah, and everybody's testing was
silly.
The same.
Every anytime I do that, I feel like I should just be shooting a Nexus Pro or something. Like it doesn't there's no point in having the Swift to do that when it does so many other things. Are you still watching? Sorry, I don't
with the 1.2 where it had a weak spring as well, and the weak spring sometimes wouldn't even fire.
Okay, Vile, get through the last part of it.
Okay, I'm what is going on here? Because is that it?
Did you just get through it?
Hang on a second. Are you telling me that they were going to do a accuracy test? They fired 5 shots at 20 foot with a high powered spring, put the extension on it, walked to the 50 foot mark, got their target, and then stopped everything.
Yes, that is exactly what happened.
They didn't pull the low powered spring. They didn't fire any extra shots. They just called it. They hit their target and walked off. What?
Yes,
that is
your
metrics.
And it's played off like it's a joke. And it's hard for me to tell if it is a scripted joke, if it was intended to be that way.
I don't know.
Or if
that's not.
Or
a joke.
If they really. Or if they're like hiding something. Like they hit the target and they like, I don't want to risk having any bad shots after that.
Yeah, like it's,
but like
because like
his
one take and
his over
it.
Like. For any of us, like hitting a target like that at 50 feet is like, oh, good, this is working well. It's not that crazy of a thing to do to hit a target at 50 feet with that kind of high power blaster.
Yeah, I tested my Nexus Pro that I've got completely built hits 220s, and my testing was always at 50 foot.
Right.
I that's kind of my metric was testing at 50 foot because it was a high powered build for like long distance or kind of like part. Well. the club I played in was 230s, and we played longer distance and stuff like that. So yeah. It was built for that. But
the other possibility, the other way that I can interpret what happened in that scene is that this was like the 10th take.
Yeah.
And they were all ready to go home. And they hit the target once and then went, oh, we're done. We did it. We're not like,
yeah.
But like they'd done multiple takes and they couldn't get the accuracy. So like, it's hard to say. Like I said, I was honestly like, you know, like Captain Xavier is not a bad shot, but he's not a marksman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having really, but he knows what he's doing. And he was having really good accuracy luck with, I shouldn't say luck. I mean, I don't know how much of it is luck, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that, Dart Jam had a whole thing about. They had an episode recently where they were talking about reviews. And one of the topics they really dug into was accuracy tests in general. You're not testing the accuracy of a blaster by holding it with your hands and shooting it at a target. You're right. Testing like how well you are able to hit a target with the blaster. Part of that is the consistency of the blaster, but there are so many other factors. And if you haven't controlled for other factors, you're not telling us anything about the blaster. You're telling us something about this dude that's holding the blaster as much as you are telling us anything about the blaster.
Yeah. That's like zeroing in a scope. It's
Dart Zone is like for Captain Xavier, like part of it is the entertainment value of watching him play with the blaster. There's really nothing wrong with that. And it's not like Dart Zone is unique in doing this, in making this error, but like we all do it to some degree. But yeah, I don't know. It just felt like kind of a nothing sandwich.
Yeah, and I had seen some people on Discord bring up that fact, and I hadn't watched the video yet, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. And I was not expecting it to just be like, well, we hit the first shot, let's go home, everybody. That's definitely not what I was expecting.
I'm sorry, Dart Zone, for titling an accuracy test. There was no accuracy testing.
Now
Bradley Phillips is out in Australia laughing at you right now.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm kind of excited for Bradley to get his hands on one of these. His standards are extremely high, but good. I'm glad we have someone like that. That's important.
Well, Bradley's game type really calls for that type of stuff. Like a 300 FPS blaster is not uncommon because he plays in airsoft field specifically. So
yeah,
you know,
totally.
Like for him, this would be should be the blaster for him in all, if anybody.
So I do want to say, because we have, I think, justifiably raised a lot of concerns about this product, which we don't have in hand. So, like, I don't want to act like our word on it is holy in any way, or in person informed. I do want to say that Captain Xavier's video did give me some hope, a lot more hope for it. It more cements to me the idea that it really is designed for higher power than even the springs that are included.
Yeah.
Jolt, have you watched his video yet?
Yeah, I did watch Xavier's video. He did seem to have pretty good luck hitting the targets.
That and also he compared it to the 1.2. Like he brought the 1.2 out and he showed, you know, how rattly and kind of loose it is, and then compared that to the Mark IV, and it's like, oh, like it really does seem like they learned a lot of lessons from the 1.2. The Mark IV seems really solidly built.
It seems solidly built, but I would say still, it does not look like nearly as high a quality product as the Harrier at a similar price point. So personally,
my judgment
on the Mark IV is go buy a Harrier.
It's hard. I mean, you know, again, I don't have either of these blasters in front of me. If I had to order, well, first of all, you can't get the Mark IV yet. Like everything is still pre-orders. But if I had to get if I had my option of any primary class Springer from a major brand currently on the market, for a event tomorrow, I would probably go with the Harrier if I didn't have to pay for it. If I did have to pay for it, I'd probably go for the Tryon. the Mark IV doesn't yet inspire the confidence to go over the things that we have more information about. I guess what I really want to say about it is I feel like Dart Zone is going so hard with their marketing that they're hurting themselves.
I'd have to agree.
And like, I honestly, if they had just been like, here is our new blaster, we are sending it to the people who always do reviews and you can buy it soon, and just been like, that's it. It, like, I feel like things would have been like, we would have looked at it and been like, okay, I have some concerns, but like, let's see. But they did a podcast episode and they talked about it and they made a bunch of goofy videos of a guy not talking about it, but like doing the throw prime, which again, you can only do with the low power spring that doesn't seem to work well with the blaster. I know that they're skirting around the like power level restrictions thing with this blaster, where like if they put the kind of power in it that it's designed for, it seems like they would get in trouble. I just feel like they're going too hard with the marketing and it's giving the hobby so many things to gripe about that we just don't need to be griping about until we have the product. But like, if you're going to present it this way, we have the opportunity to react. And you could just be like, look, here's our new thing.
My reaction to this marketing is, oh boy, Dart Zone sure knows how to put the bullshit in no bullshit marketing.
I know.
I've had a fair point. I've had such thoughts about point. Like the marketing that I've seen on their Instagram account. And I, in so many cases, just go, what is this? Every time. I don't know. It's
I remember something. Seeing a thing about the Deuce Pro where they were saying, how do you gear up for your Nerf War? And I was being a cheeky little bastard and I commented, I gear up for my Nerf War by buying a revolver that knows how to rotate properly.
Ooh, ouch. I mean, okay, so here's the thing about the Instagrams and TikToks of a lot of these brands. Because X-Shot does this a lot, too, possibly even more than Dart Zone does.
Oh, definitely.
It's UGC, user-generated content, is a lot of it. There was actually a video recently that X-Shot put out, which starts with a... Do I even want to tell the story? I should. There's a,
I feel like this one might be one to keep out. Like, as much as I'm disgusted by it.
I'm just going to say, X-Shot has allowed some pretty questionable videos to go on their TikTok. One in particular, we don't need to talk about it in detail on the podcast, but it's just weird marketing choices. But I know that it's because they're essentially just hiring other people to... They're like, have some blasters, we pay you, you make this video, and we post it. And it's a thing that involves our blasters. And that's how a lot of this ad content is generated, because it's supposed to work in sort of a like viral-ish way. And Dart Zone is doing a lot of that too. I don't know how much of the stuff on Dart Zone's channel is actually their staffers creating content. I know that Brennan, who's in the Mark IV video, is like, I don't know if he's the head of marketing, but he's definitely like the figurehead of it. I don't know what their exact positions are. It's hard because it's like I feel like Dart Zone is a little bit confused on who their audience is. They leaned into being the company that deals with the hobby. And I will say, I think if we want to know why Nerf doesn't make stuff for the hobby, the way Dart Zone is getting treated is why.
Yeah.
Right?
Would make sense.
Not that it's not deserved with a lot of the things that they do, a lot of the ways that they market things, but that's why Nerf is not interested in touching it. Also, it's just a tiny market compared to the market that they sell.
Yeah. It kind of is, because most of their market is taken up by Airsoft, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of Dart Zone's marketing, and I want to be brief on this because I really want to get to the meat of this episode. Dart Zone also put out some new information about their Blaster Bash event, and which we covered in the episode 9. But the information was a little bit scant at the time. We knew that it was in a big stadium. They were partnering with the Switchbacks, and there was a really confusing ticketing system. there were supposed to be multiple game types. They had something that sounded like an HVZ, but it wasn't explained, and you had to pay extra to go to it. And it seemed to potentially violate the HVZ's Creative Commons license. Da-da-da. Okay, so they put out a new website, and I want to read a little bit about this, and then we can talk about it a smidge. So we do know, you know, this is supposed to offer... Event details. One day, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., Colorado Springs, daytime ticket. What you get, 1 to 2 hours of nonstop fun, 8 unique game modes, 20,000 darts, 300 plus blasters, all day giveaways, dart blasting target practice, first look at new blasters. Before we move on, so it seems from this that the way the tickets work is you go through the Switchbacks ticketing system. And normally when you look at, this is why I didn't want to do an episode segment on this. Like, I don't want to explain all this in the news show. When you buy tickets to like a stadium, you know, they give you the like 3D model of the stadium and you like zoom around it and like click where you want to sit and you see if there's seats available there. And then you click on the seats and like zooms in. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you bought tickets at a stadium?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay. They're using that ticketing system, but they just have time slots represented as if they were seats in a stadium. Okay. And so if you go to the buy tickets page now, yes, I know I'm leaving the Dart Zone Blasters website. What happens is you see all of the times. You can actually scoot. If you click in that area, you can move them around because they're actually seats in a 3D model. It's very weird. If you click on one, you can buy tickets for that time. And I think, because I can't get this far because I don't want to enter my billing information, you can decide whether you're buying a 1 hour or 2 hour segment at that point.
I'm so confused.
Let me tell you, it doesn't get any easier if you're looking at it. So if I click on the 12 hour, like the 12 PM one, right? But the ticket, they're 30 minute. Okay. This should not be like this. What you're supposed to be able to do is click on a time segment and choose whether you're buying an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah.
The time segments available are 30 minutes apart. If you have people coming in with new ticket lengths every 30 minutes, how are you keeping track of whether people have been there for their full time allotment and kicking them out?
No comment.
How does that work? What are they planning on doing? Okay, here's the other thing. Because the zombie attack one, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Because the zombie one, which is the evening, is after all the other time slots, the 4:30 and 5 p.m. time slots are the only ones that have sold out. Because people want to go at the end, get some of the game in, and then stay for, I assume, and stay for the zombie thing. Here's the thing. Because it's a seat buying system, you can't buy multiple time slots at once. I think that if you want, there's no like cart. You pick your seat and you tell it how many, your time slot, and you tell it how many tickets. And then you have to like, if you want a longer time session, you have to like go back in and do it again, I think.
This is so... This is such...
They're using SeatGeek, which is not designed for this, basically, is what I'm trying to say. None of it makes any sense. They actually have a how to buy 3-step instructions on their website.
Because how to buy the tickets, you've got a problem.
It's a big problem. It's a big problem. Okay. So that is the first bullet point in their daytime tickets thing. 1 to 2 hours of nonstop fun.
1 to 2 hours of nonstop fun trying to figure out how to buy the tickets.
Yeah. 8 unique game modes. When are the different game modes available? Are they going to have so many people there during every time slot that they are going to be constantly running all 8 game modes? Or are the different game modes happening at different times? There is no schedule. So if you're buying tickets for certain time slots, you don't know if you have access to any game mode.
Oh my God.
Or just specific ones. There's no information about that, but they're selling tickets I don't know.
My head's already splitting.
Like, what if you want to go there specifically to play Capture the Flag, and it turns out, oh, well, we're only doing Capture the Flag in the morning, and you bought afternoon tickets. Okay, well, maybe you should have told me that. We just don't know.
How hard is it to make a schedule on an Excel spreadsheet?
Buddy, I got no idea. 20K darts, 300 plus blasters, fine. All day giveaways, cool. Dart blasting target practice, fine, I guess. I don't know. It's a weird thing. Like, you get together with a bunch of other people to play Nerf, and you go there and do target practice. Maybe there's something else to that. They don't explain it. First look at new blasters. Interesting.
Mark IV.
I'm sure. Maybe there's more new stuff. Mostly this ties into the conversation about how they've sort of stopped bringing new stuff. It seems like they've... someone said... Oh, I think it was in Beret's video. I think he says this. That someone asked the rep at Maryland Mayhem why they didn't bring the Mark IV. And he says he tried to, and he was told he couldn't. I think that they just don't want hobbyists to see it before they're ready.
I think it's because of the 1.2 situation where, if you'll remember, they brought that to an event and we found all the problems with it. And I bet that put a dent in those profits.
I think it is 100% due to the 1.2 situation. I don't know if it even hurt their profits necessarily, but it definitely hurt
the
view of the blaster in the hobby.
Yeah, it hurts a reputation, and I mean that's no.
Wanted that blaster after.
Yeah.
The
FPT.
And you also have to realize that, like, you know, the hobby is this small group, the overall audience is a much larger group, but the hobby also is the YouTubers, and the YouTubers have more influence overall than, like, you can't write off the YouTube and TikTok presence, like. A lot of the people communicating to a larger audience about the blasters in any way beyond just like scripted combat videos are hobbyists. So they have to take that group seriously, and they put themselves at risk when they put that stuff in front of people before they feel like they're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Nighttime tickets.
Oh God.
Oh, here we go.
Zombie attack. Let me read this once.
Yeah.
When the sun goes down, the zombies come out. Join us for a 4-hour zombie foam dart game like you've never experienced before. We are partnering with talented actors from Hellscream Haunted House to give you a truly immersive zombie chase experience with, and I kid you not, these two words are written in, you know, like early 2000s, like emo typing where every other letter is lowercase and uppercase. Real life zombies.
Wait, what?
Real life is written lowercase r, uppercase e, lowercase a, uppercase l, lowercase I, uppercase f, lowercase e.
Okay.
Listen, I got nothing.
Dark zone, you good?
Whether you hide behind bunkers, outrun the dead, or tag a zombie with your dart zone blaster, your mission is to end the game with more humans on the field than zombies. But watch out, because if you're tagged by a zombie, you will turn. So
they changed the name. Because HVZ is trademarked.
Yes, correct. This is functionally, at its core, HVZ. The addition of paid actors to play starting zombies is very interesting. I think it's reasonable if you are going to literally be paying people. This is my opinion. If you are literally going to be paying people to perform, essentially, in this game, it's reasonable to charge money for it. I think that's a weird choice. Like, no HVZ has to do that because you have people who want to participate and play as zombies.
Yeah. My wife wants to play an OG like that. We want to do an HVZ because I've never been able to. And she wants to start as an OG zombie.
Yeah. It's fun.
OZ teacup.
Yeah.
But I get they're advertising it as a blaster event, and they're a blaster company, and so they want people to use the blasters more.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what's up. I think that one of the reasons HVZ is free and should be free is because there is an element of like, well, I have a blaster. I want to play with my blaster for a long time. But if you get tagged early, you have to give it up. But if you didn't pay anything for it, it's like, all right, well, I'm just here to have fun. So it's fine. I'll be a zombie. It'll be fun. If you paid, how much is it? If you paid dollars, whatever, however much it was, zombie attack. Oh, I can click on it. $56.
Oof.
Yikes.
And for a 4-hour event, man, when I play a music concert, people frequently don't even pay anything at the door. I guess.
Yeah.
My gear costs, my keyboards cost as much as a bunch of blasters. Anyway, if you pay $56 for this zombie event, many people are going to come in with the expectation of getting to play with blasters a lot and shoot a bunch of zombies. You create this sort of broken expectation, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Because if you get tagged, if you're going to be there for a 4-hour event and you get tagged in the first, let's say, 15 minutes.
Oh, God.
And you were there and you were decked to the nine with, you know, all of your gear and your loadout and you just got all this stuff. But for some reason, you know, you just got pinned down and you got tagged.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there just going, I drove up here or flew out or did whatever, and I paid $56 and I'm pissed. Like,
yeah,
you know, because you can't even do your own loadout. You're having to do their loadout. So you're even more restricted, because most times when people do HVZs, they've built it. I mean, even we were talking about Xavier earlier, if you look at Xavier, in most people who do that, like especially like him, they have spent so much time, money, and effort in designing, creating, and building their entire world for their HVZ games. And to kind of try to take it and then say, well, here's what you're going to get. And it's like the only place I could see this where it's not going to necessarily matter is for a younger demographic where you're trying to get kids into it or whatever. Yeah, sure, it's not really a big deal. But even then, the fact that you're throwing $56 down versus a free HVZ, it's still like, he's even at the free HVZs, a lot of times they have loaners. A lot of times they have stuff available for you. Like, you don't have to even bring your own loadout and they can give you something,
right?
You know? So it's something. I don't know, man.
I don't know exactly what they have planned, but I can tell you for sure, it ain't worth $56.
Yeah.
It doesn't. I don't know. I can't say for sure. I certainly have questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, like, asking someone to pay for HVZ is just really cringe in the first place. So that goes directly against the whole idea of HVZ. So, like, screw that.
It is upsetting. And, like, you know, looking at a lot of the HVZ events that we've covered, I've been to one HVZ myself. A lot of the character of the game comes from the story stuff that's been done and the playfulness and the cosplay of it and the theming. There's no theming here other than just zombies. And admittedly, it's their first one. I'm sure a lot of HVZs when they first started out were just like, ah, there's zombies and we have some missions for you.
There's a lot in them now. There's a lot of theming and storylines to HVZs. And the thing that I really don't like
Maryland
about
Mayhem one had a pirate theme. And we just, you know.
This, what I don't like about it is you're trying to take a community built game type and you're really trying to really kind of sink the corporation aspect into it, which basically pulls the life and the soul out of it. And that's the feeling I get from it. And that's kind of sad to say, because it's kind of soul crushing when you see that, when they take something and they just turn it into a husk. And that's the unfortunate feeling that I get out of it. Hey, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody who goes pays the $56 and they're going to be like, this was the best experience of my life. You know, I'd love to be proven wrong.
I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to be wrong. They're hitting all the wrong notes off the bat. And the marketing of it is troubling. And it kind of just feels like they sat down and had a meeting and went, well, what are things people like in the foam flinging hobby? And someone said, I hear about this humans versus zombies thing. It seems like it's a big part. All right, well, let's do that. And so they did it and didn't really look too deep into the soul of it. And again, I've mentioned this before, last time we talked about this. I know that Dart Zone reps have been to HVZ games. I don't think they participated. They've been there.
It's also difficult though, because if somebody does go and they think this is a great thing, when you go and you talk, for lack of a better term, you go and you talk to a suit, they're going to be like, how can we make this profitable? That's the first and only thing. And that's the problem with what I meant about kind of turning it into a corporate thing, is that when you really do that, that's the first thing that's on the list. How is it going to make us look good? How can we get our product into their hand and make them want it? And how are we going to make money off of it? And those are the three things. So all of the aspects of it get stripped away, because that takes time, money, effort, you know, something to it that they just don't want to do. And they're just going to look at what is the maximum amount we can really kind of, you know, get juice for the squeeze, kind of a thing. Right. And that's kind of what I think is the difficult part. Even if somebody from Dart Zone went out, and even if they did or didn't play, but they looked at it and they said, this looks amazing, and they try to take it back to corporate, you know, it's always going to end up that way. Somebody is going to just completely rip the soul out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. it's a tough spot to be
cold
in.
Water and, on it.
well, you know, and hopefully people don't go to this event and think that it's representative. We don't know. It hasn't happened yet. We don't really know. And they haven't given us enough detail. But right now, it doesn't feel like it would be fair to say that this is representative of the kinds of events that our hobby creates. So, again, hopefully we're wrong. Hopefully it's great. I do think that it's neat to have a major company trying to host an event. I understand why they may not, after the experience that they've had working with community members to co-run events, why they may not want to do that again. But we'll see. Hi, Grim.
Hello. Greetings.
How's it going?
I am recording. I started recording when I hopped in.
Oh, perfect. That's a delight. Well, that means that we are ready after talking a little bit too long about Dart Zone. I don't want to feel like we're trashing on Dart Zone. I have concerns.
Yeah, and that's why I said
Dart
that,
Zone
too.
Bad.
I don't know.
Okay.
We need all of the crab emojis.
Sounds like someone does want to sound like they're trashing Dart Zone, but that's fine.
Making a joke. I'm just making a joke here.
I know. Okay. While Grim runs off to get stuff, I will explain how What's That Blaster works. This is our 10th episode of What's That Blaster, in which one member of the team selects an official Nerf blaster from sometime in the history of Nerf, looks up the wiki article generally, and finds the official description. The official description of the blaster, and reads it to the rest of the team. We have an opportunity to guess what blaster it is. If we can't immediately guess, we get to use up to 3 lifelines, which each one takes away one of our 4 potential points. And the 3 lifelines are the original retail price, the original stock capacity, and the year of the blaster's release. Currently, the scores stand at me with 14 points, Vile with 13, Jolt with 15, and Grims, who started the game late, with 10. Really catching up, though, terrifyingly. It is this week Vile's turn to pick.
Yeah.
Last week was Grims' turn to pick, and we couldn't get it. So that is part of why he caught up. It is Vile's turn to pick, and once we have Grim back, I think we're ready to get into it. I know that you, Vile, have amassed a list.
I've started grabbing one or two just to make sure that I have like one on hand, and I'm not just randomly going, "Oh God, what do I need to get this week before the podcast?" Because I've done that once before. So,
totally,
and I have 2 of them on a list right now that I could pick from. So.
All right, you have one selected though.
Oh, I have one. Yeah, I'm
okay. Okay. What blaster do you? What do you have for us?
So, round out your blank arsenal with this awesome blank blaster and its special blank, giving it the highest capacity yet. The blank features a clear window to let you know where your when your ammo is getting low. A pump action handle lets you control your rate of fire and choose your blasting mode, either single or multi-shot. Add to that its blank, tactical rail, and totally awesome design, this blaster is definitely the ultimate choice for any battle.
I'm going to need you to repeat that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I started laughing there because I was like, man.
Yeah. Please just read it again.
We'll do it again. All right. Round out your blank arsenal with this awesome blank blaster and its special blank. Giving it the highest capacity yet, the blank features a clear window to let you know when your ammo's getting low. A pump action handle lets you control your rate of fire and choose your blasting mode, either single or multi-shot. Add to that its blank, tactical rail, and totally awesome design, this blaster is definitely the ultimate choice for any battle.
Messenger alert. Okay, the blank has a blank window. Okay, giving it its highest capacity ever, I feel like that's a drum. Does that make... Right? The question is it a dart drum or a disc drum? I think it's a dart drum because...
Yeah, I really think that's a drum.
Well, maybe not. I guess the disc drums don't have a window that shows you capacity.
Actually, they do.
Do they?
Yes.
But I feel like the language suggested that it, well, I guess we can't take that much detail we've learned from this language. Giving it its highest capacity ever. What blaster was released without a drum and then re-released with a drum? Does that make sense?
I'm sorry. I am so tired. I got nothing.
We're
if it's
sunk
the disc
without
drum. It's obviously the Pyragon. It's obviously something that has slam fire and a clear window. It's pump action. So
yeah. Well, again, it sounds like the drum has the clear window.
Is it Vile? Right? Could you repeat that thing again?
Yes, I could repeat it again.
We have to get Jolt on board for this, or we're lost.
All right. Round out your blank arsenal with this awesome blank blaster and its special blank. Giving it the highest capacity yet, the blank features a clear window to let you know when your ammo's getting low. A pump action handle lets you control your rate of fire and choose your blasting mode, either single or multi-shot. Add to that its blank, tactical rail, and totally awesome design. This blaster is definitely the ultimate choice for any battle. Good Lord, I cannot read this for
some
reason.
It's all good. It's all good. Okay, we forgot that it has select fire. But it sounds like it's just a two-mode select fire.
It just sounds like it's slam fire to me because...
Multi-shot?
Because the only thing that has a switch, a physical switch, is the scavenger, but that does not come with a drum. It does not have a clear window, and it is not pump action. So... I'm guessing what they mean is has slam fire.
Where are you getting pump action? Am I missing that?
It literally says pump action.
There's a spot that says a pump action handle lets you control rate of fire. So I'll just read you that little blurb.
Lets you control
things that have clear windows on it. The other thing that comes to mind was Doomlands.
I did initially think it could be the Double Dealer because that does have a clear jam
or the
door.
Judge.
But no, it's not the Judge. It's not the Judge.
The Double Dealer would have used like double language or like two language.
That's true. And it did not have a
that is like the point of that blaster if it has one.
Yeah. This is a really tough one.
Okay. We said Pyragon. I do not think it is the Pyragon. I don't think it's a Vortex Blaster because there is no reasonable way to describe those as having I see how multi-shot could be slam fire. I see how that could be what they're calling slam fire. So I take back what I just said. Because it does have slam fire. right?
The Pyragon does.
It probably has slam fire.
Yes, the Pyragon does have slam fire.
And then doesn't the drum have a window, but it just shows you the current chamber of the drum?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It could be the Pyragon. I gotta be honest.
It could.
Thanks for this one, Vile.
Oh my god.
If we were going with Vortex, though, didn't the Revonix 360 at release have more ammo? It doesn't really fit the description, but I'm pretty sure it had more ammo.
No, it did not.
Yeah, but it does not have a window. You have no clue how much ammo is in that thing if you're not counting.
It kind of does, but it's not a clear window. It's not a clear window. It's
just like the drum is exposed. You can just kind of see.
No. I wasn't saying that that was the thing it could be. I was just saying if add more ammo than the Pyragon, then that would make it probably not the Pyragon.
It's five chambers of six. So no, it's 30.
I think we
so
just.
Like
oh, okay. I think we just got a Pyragon with a normal magazine first, and then we got it with the drum.
No, we did
right?
not. The Pyragon always came with the 40-round drum.
Okay, what's the other one, though, that's like the Pyragon, but
that's
not quite?
Lumatron slash the
Praxis. The Praxis does not have slam fire. The Praxis does not have slam fire.
I know, but it's a similar blaster that came before and didn't have a drum, and I think that that's what's going on, and I think they're calling them multi-shot. I do think it's the Pyragon. I'm thinking, the more I think about it, they previously released similar blasters to the Pyragon that did not come with a drum, then they included the drum and they added slam fire. And that
I'd say Pyragon is our best bet.
I agree at this point.
Actually, you know what we should do? We should take a lifeline on this one.
We could take a lifeline. What
release year would actually be handy?
I don't
would
think.
What are we capacity? Capacity.
Let's do capacity.
There is no other 40 round. It'll give us a drum size. Tell us it's not a drum.
So are we taking it capacity?
Capacity. We've all said it.
35.
Okay, it's the Raider.
Yeah, it's the Raider.
Oh, because that... Yeah, yeah.
Because that was something I was thinking about, because it says pump action. It has a window on the back.
Yeah,
oh,
it
and
does.
That was the
it
first...
Does.
And slam
and that
fire.
Was the first slam fire one, right?
Yes, so, like, it was.
Yeah, so it's the Raider.
So they didn't have the term slam fire yet. They were calling it multi-shot. That makes sense.
Originally, the Raider's full title is the Rapid Fire Raider.
Okay. Do we need to... Are there any other versions of the Raider?
I mean...
No,
not
really.
I
just
don't think,
other colors.
I don't think we should be distinguishing between Clear Raider and Gear Up Raider, because it's not even supposed to be a different theme.
Is that so? What was that stupid blaster that was like...
That
it
at
was,
least had a different name. These were just straight up the same name.
All right, I'm fine with Raider. I'm fine with Raider.
Different parts or lack of.
Yeah,
parts.
Raider.
We're
I'm going
the
with
Raider.
Same parts.
Yeah.
All right. It is the Raider. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah, let y'all just sit there and squirm for the
I
longest time.
I hate you
time.
So much, you bastard.
See, I actually really like Vials because they're not impossible, but they do make us squirm for a while. And it's always over, like, the dumbest things, like last time we were debating as to whether or not it was called the Captain Phasma Blaster
or
not.
Or Maverick or whatever, like, with that as well. Like, no, I when I was doing it, I looked at the terminology and how it was written, and I was like, this one's going to make them really question it. It's going to be such a
I love that. I absolutely love that. That's ridiculous. This makes me really enjoy this.
That was a really good one. That was a really good round.
Great job, Vile. Great job.
I hate you.
As I come down from my brain feeling scrambled by trying to guess it, I recognize that was a very good round. Nicely done. Mm-hmm. Our scores currently, I have 17 points. Vile has 13, Jolt has 18, and Grimms has caught up with Vile now having 13 points.
Let's go.
Wait, I'm still beating you?
You're still beating me by a point.
Okay.
But I think pick next week. So that could be my chance to catch up.
I thought I just picked.
Yeah, but then I pick so you could take over again. Anyway, the point scoring system is ridiculous. It's the best I could do. Okay. We have
is they okay?
We have come to the main point of this thing. Finally, an hour in. I was hoping to keep this one short, but I guess Dart Zone is just too exciting of a topic to not spend 40 minutes on. I say 40 minutes. I'm probably going to trim that down. So we'll see. We have cut to the point where we are going to take all of y'all's questions. I'm excited to answer. I think there's like 10 questions, but there's some really good ones. So
there are some that, like, in particular, I could give really in-depth answers.
Some of them could take some time. Some of them definitely won't. And that's great. That's amazing.
Let's go in chronological order from the first to the last.
Well, I may scramble it a little bit, but I will more or less go in chronological order. Unfortunately, it does not. Oh, wait. Sort by newest first. Aha. Yes, the newest one is Maritime Foam saying, woo, congrats. Okay. That's not a question, though. The first comment, of course, was I came to the comment section to see what people's questions were. Thank you, Shattered Skies. Very good. Let's start with Axel Sorax, a valued contributor to the show. Thank you,
Axel.
Been
with us since the very beginning, practically.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your contributions. Asks, how do each of you recite the news? Are they memorized from little write-ups? Do you have makeshift teleprompters off camera? Do some team members have it easier than others? Looking at you, Vile and Grim. Lol.
Okay,
so Vile and Grims are cheaters.
My secrets. No.
We're definitely cheaters. I will say, in the first two episodes, I did everything based off of memory and mostly bullshitting. However, I was going through some mental health issues at the time, so I looked really dead on camera. But I can impromptu make a segment and get all the stuff done. I just now have the easier benefit that I'm a PNG tuber. I can read off a script.
Well, and that,
I see it as twist. Not. I don't see it as cheating, but rather it enhances the experience because the quality is more there.
Plot twist: one of the paid actor OZs at the Blaster Bash is episode one and episode two Grimms.
Yep.
I love having the ping tuber. I like the fact that all of our presentation styles are different. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that we have, you know, Vile with no face. It livens up the style of the show to go from story to story and have each type look.
It also kind of tickles me seeing my little PNG tuber zip across the screen, random directions and whatnot. I love your
segments take significantly longer to edit, but it is so worth it every single time. I'm really happy with how they look. And it adds a lot of life to the episode. And of course, now everybody's seen it. The first time that two of us have been in one segment at once, your little appearance in my segment. I
thought
that
was super
so
cool.
Good.
Yeah, I can just like literally be like, you can just take the green screen, remove the green screen, put me in the segment, and I'm
there.
It's
so good. Okay, that's how Grim recites the news. Vile, Joel, you go. How do you recite the news?
So I probably have the least professional way of doing this possible. I do not write a script. I literally put the camera up on my janky mount, which is a cardboard box and a wooden block with X-Acto blades to keep it from sliding. And I just bullshit my way through it with like 19,000 takes.
That's what I do on YouTube, or at least I don't have 19,000 takes, but that's what I do on my actual channel. So it's a fair enough skill to have.
I sometimes lose my train of thought. I usually record in very small segments so I can just edit them together.
So Jolt gives me all of his segments pre-edited.
Yes, I make KT's life a little bit easier.
Well, yes and no. I often have to go in and find the segments where you edit it so I can line up things appearing and disappearing. Otherwise, it looks really disjointed. So I have to go like frame by frame. It's fine. But I do appreciate that I don't have
this.
I do appreciate that I don't have to edit out bad takes. That is nice. Vile, you want to give us your process?
I have a different setup. I stream and I work on my table as you see it in the news segment. So you see that I actually have a monitor directly in front of me. And I used to just one take it and usually just say it. That's how my YouTube was. I used to just sort of like Jolt, but I didn't do that many takes. I just kind of winged the whole thing and then just cut it down to whatever worked for this.
Yeah. When I edited the first two episodes, that was kind of how it was with the segments I received. And it's honestly fine enough. Or editing-wise, it didn't take too long to get it all stitched together.
It's not too bad, and I am always on the fence a little bit because I appreciate having options when I'm doing editing. Sometimes I find that like what you think is the good take, actually I want to use part of that and part of something you thought was a bad take. Like, I appreciate really having like a long tail before or after so that I can always make sure the transitions are exactly the length that I want.
Yeah,
them to be.
I've literally made it a habit now that like I take a deep breath, press the record button, I literally count down to five, yeah. And then when I end, I also wait to five or whatever ish. Yeah. But it's kind of inconsistent. But I try and give you like a little tail at the beginning and end.
I might
now.
Give well, the but, longest but on the tail.
Other, but on the other hand, Jolt segments work fine because of the way that Jolt records them. Mm-hmm. Right, like Jolt is doing it more disjointed, and so it makes sense for Jolt to be the one doing that editing. I really appreciate that the way we put the show together allows each of us to work in a way that makes us comfortable, and I think that that makes the show better overall. Yeah.
So for mine, I do have a script, and I actually just, it's literally on a notepad, like for my computer, and it's just on that screen, just taking it up. Yep. And I have all of my scripts done, and I actually collaborate with KT quite a lot about that. I'll come up with kind of a rough draft. KT might come in, give me some counterpoints. We kind of just go back and forth, and then I'll go and I'll do my takes. If I do mess up my take, sometimes I will keep that in just so KT has something to put at the very end of the stuff. Unlike this recent episode where it was more of a joke about KT, who said last time I didn't have any outtakes, so I.
You haven't checked the episode yet, Vile, but Grimms did the same thing.
I saw that.
They're both there.
Yes, I thought that was funny that both of us the same time had that.
It's really good. Mine
doesn't take that many takes. Sometimes I might have to do some practicing as well, and that's also, you'll see it in the outtakes where I'm like blah 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 and doing all this weird stuff.
Yep.
So just try to get you warmed up, and then I'll do my takes. Usually I can get them one go. Sometimes I might trip over some words, so I have to just practice it real quick, and then I'll just hit out that take again and be done. And I'll trim up a lot of it a lot of times just to help for editing time. And I'll leave a few little bits here and there, but I'll take out the majority if I was like really messing up on a take two or three times or whatever, just to not have to waste time for editing purposes.
What makes it easier with my scripts is I try and write them in a way that I feel like I'd actually say this, because granted, that leaves me a lot of leeway because I'm rather verbose. Jolt can confirm, I've mentioned this before, that I used to have friends that said when I talk, it can go on a range from herder, insert stupid comment here, to it sounds like I'm trying to write an essay using a thesaurus and a dictionary.
Incredible. I can confirm.
Speaking for myself, I record in the same area that I do a lot of my family foam sport content. I do everything on my phone. I don't own a nice camera. I have a nice microphone, a nicer microphone attached to my phone. Despite having a space where I do a lot of music work, I have all kinds of weird problems with background noise that I don't always notice until the last second, but I've been doing audio work since... we were just talking about this. I've been doing audio work since the early 2000s. Like I can work around it. I do use a teleprompter. I fully script my segments. I have a quote unquote teleprompter. It is an iPad on a stand. I actually have a reflective teleprompter thing, but there's no way to use it effectively with my phone. So they're just kind of right next to each other. So if you ever see me like glancing right off frame, the same way that Addy did in a lot of the twin episodes, it's because I have a pseudo teleprompter that's just an iPad, and I move it as close to the camera lens as I possibly can so that I'm not diverting my eyes too far. I do fully script my segments. I line up all the props that I intend to use before I start recording. I'm relatively meticulous about it. So that's how I do it. I have a whole research session where I sit down and sort of look into all the stories. And if you're on the Discord, you'll notice the period of time a couple days before we start recording where I start suddenly reactivating all the news threads and asking questions about stuff. It's because I'm researching things and I want to get people's opinions and like sort of spur me in new research directions to make sure I'm covering all the aspects of my stories.
Yeah. Much to my friend's chagrin, actually, at this point, they will be like, hey, you want a game right now? I'm like, I can't talk right now. Yeah. I'm researching and whatnot. Yeah. Or like, I'm writing scripts right now. And they're like, it's literally taken you a full day. What could be so important? And I'm like, it's a passion project. Okay. Yeah, okay.
It is a passion project.
Just let me be.
It's a good way to describe it. Okay. Mook, another regular in our
I do believe there was another question underneath in the reply.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Axel Sorax also asked, also, when am I guest starring? Lol, JK.
That's that a very interesting question.
I mean, if we had a contributor who was going to appear on the show, you would be in the top running just based
it
on
probably
how many people
Axel, like Chicken Masher, and a couple other people are probably on the top area. So
we have talked about having guest reporters, whether it's other major content creators or contributors to the show. That's something that's on. That is something that's actually on our idea board. Is having guest presenters. And I imagine if we did it, it would be a mix of regular contributors and higher profile people that we know.
We definitely have to make sure that there's like some consistency on quality, and then also probably make sure like the segment lines up well with the person. But like, yeah, it would be cool.
Yeah,
plus,
but basically,
plus our format already lends itself well to guests because we
split
four separate
people.
Hosts.
That actually leads Vile. Were you gonna say something?
No, I just said I was just agreeing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, that actually leads into our next question quite well. Mook, another regular in our scene, asks, do you guys have any more guests planned for the podcast? Congrats on 1K. Love the channel and what you guys do for the community. Thank you very much. We are doing our best. Do we have guests planned for the podcast? We so far have asked guests to come on when we specifically, like, it's sort of a confluence of, like, we're talking about a topic, we know someone who is closely related to that topic, we think they'd be a good person on with the podcast, some of us already have good, like, relationships with them, and so that is how we got Taffy on. We've all worked with Taffy in various capacities before, and they're really funny. And so it was just a really good fit. And similarly, Anthony of Maritime Foam, Jolt and I have both discussed stuff with them quite a bit in the past. So it was pretty easy to kind of get them on, and they both had new blasters coming out. So it was like perfect timing.
It's like a topical thing. So we won't really know who we want to invite
exactly.
on until that is, you know, relevant, if that makes any sense.
Yep. So it's just
it's just as much a mystery as to who's going to be a guest on the podcast as it is to you. Up until we decide,
we pretty much,
and that's part of the fun.
We pretty much figured out as the news is coming on, and go, oh, the person who is involved in this thing might be a good podcast guest. Let's ask them, and either available or they're not. So,
yep.
Hopefully that makes sense. Chris Checkers, Lara. Wait. There's not actually any questions in here, but thank you for the... Wait, yes, there are. Read more. There's the questions. Haha. Okay, I'll read the whole comment. Hi, congratulations, dude. So awesome to see a channel get to 1,000 subs. And before I can give you all at least a few questions, I wanted to say thank you for taking the initiative to report the news of the hobby. I know that Foam Blast was the first, technically...
Actually, before that, it was
Jangular. And Foam Blast took it over from Jangular when Jangular didn't want to do it. Jangular was a guest on a bunch of the early episodes, too. Just kind of coming back to the old stomping grounds. And then Drac took over very briefly. Nevertheless, keep up the great work. Thank you very much. We do our best. I was trying to take a cough drop, and I dropped it. So I guess it really is a cough drop. Oh, I dropped it.
Ba-dum-ching.
Well, I'll just suffer, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as questions go, here's a few for each of you. One, what would be the first blaster you would come back to the assembly... Oh, wait. What would be the first blaster you would, I assume, like to come back to the assembly line in eons? Let's just do these one at a time. What is the first blaster that has not been manufactured in a while that you would like to see come back?
Ratchet Blast. Because they break.
I was gonna say, Jolt, you want to go first? Ratchet Blast. Okay.
The plastic in them degrades, that, so none of them are good
that
anymore,
is a,
really.
That is a cool mechanism we haven't ever seen again.
Technically, a couple of Boomco's had a similar
My pick is really boring. I would either say the Raven or the Longshot. Those two just they were the blasters of the time when I joined the hobby. You know, everyone had their own custom Longshots back in like 2015. And so they just have a really soft spot in my heart, I guess, nostalgia-wise for me.
It would be really nice to get Raven to have Ravens in production again.
Yeah.
Vile, what do you think?
I would probably go, it's going to be kind of a goofy one, but probably something like the secret shot. Just the green, the old vintage green one that had it in the handle. Both me and Jolt have rebuilt one, but I like those little like old retro sci-fi pistols that they made like that. It's somewhat sort of like the sharpshooter, or was it the sharpshooter or whatever the other vintage one. There was the first one and the second one. They made two of them. But I like those weird kind of, like, they had just really interesting lines and greeble work. So they were just, like, the priming mechanisms.
I love them.
And the priming mechs were really, like, they were huge. They weren't, like, you know, if they were just beefed up a little bit and they weren't that sort of brittle plastic, they would be, like, little powerhouses, too. I think that's what I would like. And I know that they're doing it with the limited line with the, that vintage one. I think it was the sharpshooter. Yeah. They're bringing that one back. But again, like, I would like to see more of that.
Personally, I think I would have to say, maybe this is cheating, but I just want Zombie Strike to come back. I feel like I missed out on that, that era.
You're not wrong. That was a good line.
I love it.
It was a really good
line. Zombie Strike is awesome.
I love the depth of, like, storytelling that line had. If you go over progressively over the line, the designs of the blasters become more like jank and pieced together as it goes on. It like told a story.
Yeah.
Over the time where like initially it was like, oh, we have these weapons and they have like zombie stuff splattered on them. And then eventually it's like, okay, we are really cobbling stuff together at this point. We barely are holding up against the zombies, but we're going to keep it going. Like the designs change over time.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I want more of that. I want more.
I feel like I liked the cobbled together idea. I just didn't like how it literally looked like they just slapped random paneling ideas. It's like, all right, this is going to be aluminum bars. This is going to be a screw.
There was less of that at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then there was more of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love is the storytelling built into the design. And I feel like
I guess it's kind of like I liked the idea of both the less and the more. It's just I guess it's like I wish they made a little more structural sense when they got more cobbled together.
Fair.
Either way, very cool concept. I absolutely loved Zombie Strike. One of my favorite lines of all time.
Okay, next question. If you were given the golden opportunity to go to any major Nerf company, let's say major foam flinging company, and collab with them, who would they be and why?
Ooh.
Busby.
That's a very easy choice for me, actually.
Okay, Jolt says Busby. What does Grim say?
It would either be between my inner nostalgia hobbyist would say Explorer, because I really loved their stuff back when I was younger, and I really loved how they were doing stuff with the custom CNC'd PVC and acetyl blasters that were designed for hobbyists inspired by stuff like the long shot and whatnot. So I'd want to create something a lot of their designs haven't been spruced up for the modern age, so if I did something with them, it would be something like helping them make a blaster that has their aesthetic and their build quality, but a bit more modern and compatible with like Talons and stuff.
That's
like that.
Cool idea.
Otherwise, my other choice would be Game Face, actually.
Vile, what do you think?
That's a tough one for me.
Okay, well, you think about that, because I'm with Jolt, and I think the reason that I would want to work with Busby, I think, might be partly the same reason Grimms would want to work with Game Face. It's almost less about the stuff they design and more just like it seems like a fun company to work with. Like we've gotten to talk to Blasterface, one of the Game Face designers, and it's just nice talking and like
shout out to
feeling like they're open.
Really nice guy.
Awesome
really, really
guy.
Nice guy.
Awesome guy.
And it's like. And every time I engage with Busby, it's kind of similar. They're just like more personable and they're responsive to stuff and they're just fun. And like, they're like, Busby grips.
Are.
Yeah. Like, no, Busby grips. Fine. Yes. A lot of their grips are ridiculous, but like their stuff is always just fun.
They've had some really
cool designs.
That's
what I love
about
it. It doesn't look like a gun. It's silly. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I think I'm kind of in line with the Busby because they also were the ones that had like the biggest, you know, mega mags, like mega dart mags and stuff like that. Again, just funny design, like cool designs, and actually were really awesome. And surprisingly, X-Shot. And the reason I was interested in X-Shot is because this recent
also
stuff
true.
They've been yes. doing is getting into what like Busby used to be like. And
true.
I would, so that's why for me, it's like Busby is definitely a good one. And then X-Shot would be my next, because like, again, the crazy stuff we're seeing from the Insanity line is like, that reminds me of like what old school Busby used to be like, just weird.
It also kind of reminds me of what old school N-Strike felt like yeah. to me, looking at the commercial, seeing like the Vulcan on TV or stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, for sure. That's, so for me, that's, and that would be mostly just because they're companies that you can still technically work for. Most of the other ones are either out of the game or don't, you know, aren't around anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess what we're trying to say is Busby, call us.
Yeah.
Please, yeah, Busby. That would be cool.
Well, I want to say signature blaster line, but we kind of have a competitor's name in our name, so we might need to rebrand first.
Well, Busby, work that out.
Provisional
Busby
News Network.
Okay, hold on. We are now two questions through the three of this one person's questions. Okay. What paint scheme would you like to see on a blaster from any company? I just want to see more of what Nerf is doing with AccuRival. And what was the other one that just happened that we really liked that came from Nerf? That was honestly kind of the double punch. I want more of that.
Like some of the elite 2.0 stuff.
I just want more of that. I don't even I don't expect them to. You know, I do my like neon thing, which is sort of similar to what Dr. Flux likes to do. Sure, I love that. I love the aesthetic of the original bow and arrow. That's kind of what most of my custom blasters that I order from people are based on. I'd love that, but honestly, like, they're almost there with the double punch and the new Rival stuff. I want more. That's my answer.
What about you, Vile?
I mean, Rival Edge, because I like, obviously, I'm purple and, like, neon green or translucent green.
Rival Edge was good, too.
Rival Edge I like the color. I like a darker, because it's easy if I want to put purple accents on it, you know, but still keep it quite bright and nice. So, you know, it's nice because it works with red. It can work with a dark, like I said, purple or black that can kind of accent it really nicely. Like, there's a lot you can do with it. But I, again, we're kind of like, hey, Nerf, you kind of have some really good color themes here. You know, maybe you should keep some of your other blasters in that line.
Right.
Yeah, and of course my color choice is no surprise to anyone. Herder didn't. My favorite colors are black and red, so obviously the Crimson series is the one that I like the best, and the one that I desperately want the long shot from. Like, seriously, all I'd have to do is take another long shot's parts, other than the main blaster, paint them black, slap it on that thing, and I have something in my colors.
That would be pretty cool.
It
would be cool to see a reissue of those rare colors.
What I want. I want. Come on, Nerf. You got to do it.
N-Strike.
Bring back the N-Strike yellow, please.
Let's all say. Oh, I was gonna say. Let's all say it together. It's gonna be N-Strike.
N-Strike. Yeah. It's N-Strike.
N-Strike yellow is a really hot color scheme. Nice. Though, it so is, I do agree with you on that one, Joel. It's spectacular.
I think I got burned on that color early and didn't realize how nice it really was, because I was just so used to seeing them in bad condition in thrift stores. That's all I thought of them as. But
I just associate them with like the cool kids' toys from when I was a kid and whatnot. The stuff I saw on the TV screen that I desired so much as a kid. So they just have this really cool kid factor.
I've definitely developed
a
new appreciation for it via Jolt. Finally, here we have a request. One itty bitty request. Can you all give a shout out to longtime blaster veteran Mongoose Jake and the up and coming Foam Quest, please? So
yes, we can give a nice shout out to one of our better competitors, Foam Quest. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. It's interesting actually catching Foam Quest's videos, because Foam Quest has less of a strict schedule. The way that our show works, we release every 2 weeks on Friday, regardless of when the news comes. We've talked about having a way to do breaking news stuff, but to be quite honest, I changed my mind. I like having a strict schedule. We come out on Fridays. That's what we do. I have a busy
Fair
life.
Enough. Let's not turn we this also into a roast, please.
No, it's not a roast at all.
It's not a roast. It's just saying that like we have preferences over our style and how we upload. He has preferences over how they upload, which is more than a-okay.
I appreciate watching other creators who do news, who who just, they see news and they report on it. I think
yeah, because it's kind of like in Foam Quest case, you usually get a more diet-sized news dose. Yeah. It's usually just first-party stuff specifically, and they come out relatively quick, whereas ours is a lot more, I guess, featureful,
yeah,
because it's an all-encompassing with hobby news, community news, you have your main brand, name brand news as well, and then it usually gets you a full featured episode with its own mod spotlight at the end as
yeah,
well. So both of ours are just kind of, they're in kind of separate markets.
They're different things.
Will.
And yeah. I think it's
one is like the person who's avidly searching to see the news right as it airs, whereas ours is I'm subscribed to this channel, I'll check once every
right,
two Fridays, and I know I'll get the entire news I need for the month,
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly.
Again, shout out though to Mongoose Jake.
And
super cool.
Mongoose
shout out
Jake
to Mongoose
is really
Jake
cool guy.
Is so great.
Absolutely. I love his content.
I appreciate the dedication to Buzz. As we have shown, we are also fans of the Buzzing Bee.
Yes.
Moving on, Grim Reaper 2458, a name y'all may have heard if you watched our episode
yep,
a few seconds ago.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Which member of the PNNN team is most likely to end up killing the other three in a fit of rage? The answer
me?
Is me after... No, it's me after editing video for 2 days straight.
No, trust me.
Yeah, I would
me.
Say it's KT. I would say it's KT after editing.
Yeah, I'd vote.
I feel like it's either KT or like, I feel like Vile would be the unexpected one. He kind of gives off the, it's always the quiet ones.
Vile's the serial killer.
Just one day he's, Vile's finally just, we finally meet up to hang out in person, and he's just been bottling up all of these grievances throughout PNNN's recording,
yeah,
and it's been like 3 years in, and he's like, all right, time to end
the
it.
The rage is building inside of me.
That sounds like you're about to fart.
And he just
I can't wait to
it boils
I can't
over.
Wait to extract that and make that a sound command on your stream.
Yeah, that's a perfect sound
no.
alert right there.
Damn it.
I'm actually gonna add that to my Twitch as well if you can get me the file.
I don't care if you do. If you need to.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Next up, Luke Triton. Another person who's been in our orbit for quite a while, great creator, does a lot of Lego content and Nerf content.
Super cool dude.
What are your thoughts? Yeah, very cool dude. What are your thoughts on many products, mainstream and hobbyist made, being mostly sold within North America? I live in the UK, and so many products aren't seen here or available, and it sucks as I'm missing out on some of the best stuff the Nerf hobby has to offer.
I know from talking to him, I think he had to import like his Revoltinator, I think it was, and like an AccuTrooper, because they just never made it over there.
Yeah. I know. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of people in this hobby that are in Europe, and obviously, even with like Australia and a lot of their laws and stuff that have come up in recent years. You know, the one thing I would say is that it is nice for the community to give like files that are 3D printable. I would say that's where it is nice to see that, because that helps to just get the reach out there. Name brand stuff is going to be always one of the harder ones, because every country has their different rules and laws and stuff like that to try to get around. And that always does make for an unfortunate, you know, limitation for a lot of
yeah,
people.
Yeah. We all know
then,
about the
though,
orange.
It's just like sometimes like things like the Revoltinator or the AccuTrooper, those aren't even falling outside of the law. They just straight up didn't go over there. And neither did Mega
yeah.
XL, apparently. They didn't
I mean,
get that
each
over
of,
there.
I just see it as...
Each of these big companies, they sit down and they make a calculation. A lot of times they'll put things to market in the United States and decide based on the results of that whether they're even going to bother sending it to other countries.
Yeah.
It's like not even an assured thing that they're going to ship them off to Europe when they start giving it to us, and it's based on how we buy it or if we don't. So
well, that it, whenever they sell in a country like that, they usually take out their copyrights for it in that country as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of like, it's the imports, the taxation, is it going to sell, you know, your copyrights that you're going to take in each of the countries that you're going to sell it in to make sure that you're not getting, you know, off brand
yeah.
stuff sending there or people ripping it off in some capacity. Like, there's a lot that goes into it, unfortunately, and it does, again, make the limitation.
It is just kind of sad, though, because it's...
Yeah.
Home Blasting is such a fun hobby, and so it's kind of sad that some people don't have the same accessibility to certain aspects of it or certain lines or other things that they would otherwise be interested in and have to go through all these loopholes to get
you know. Yes. I want to read the next question because my answer to it actually kind of ties into what you're saying right now. The Duke number one asks, where do you see the state of the hobby going in the next 5 years? Where do you see yourself in the hobby in the next 5 years? To the first part of that question, where the hobby is going, I feel like we're coming out of an era, which I think like the Nexus Pro is sort of like indicative of this era, where there's like a way to nerf. There's like a specific thing that you're supposed to try to do. You're supposed to try to max out power, and you're supposed to have a primary class Springer. And getting back into an era where things are more goofy and more taking advantage of what this specific hobby has to offer of varied ammo types, of unusual designs, of sort of out of the box thinking. I do think that we're getting back in that direction. And I think that that's a really good thing. I do think the hobby is headed that way.
There's a resurgence in that stuff. Obviously the double punch is a good example of that.
Yeah. And to tie it to what we were saying about the previous question. I think it's easy to get, when you have most of the reviewers of these blasters are based in the US. And so you see them review the, all these blasters. That is not what the hobby is. You know, to what Vile was saying about 3D printable blasters, obviously that's not accessible to every single person. And if you don't have your own 3D printer, maybe you can't import from the people who are printing, but someone could definitely set up a shop in Europe. A lot of these designers have actually been making metric versions of things that use Imperial hardware, making them more accessible to be built in Europe. I think accessibility of that kind of stuff is going to be really key to the future of the hobby in a worldwide sense, and the direction that the hobby's going away from the Nexus Pro mentality that we've had over the last few years.
I have an idea, and this is a little bit more depressing, but I would bet that after, now that gel, I believe, is banned in China, I believe Nerf will end up going the same way. That is my prediction for the hobby in the next 5 years, is that China will
ban. I don't want to think about that, man.
I don't want to think about that.
You are talking about China is kind of a weird and unique thing. It is separated kind of weirdly from the world when it comes to this stuff.
But, like, here's my theory here, though. All those companies that were making gel stuff, a lot of them, we've been starting to see them trying their hand at Nerf.
Right.
Starting the whole cycle over again with a new projectile that'll just get banned again.
It is. Yeah. It's a very kind of isolated thing. Again, China is it's a very large place. It is kind of isolated when it comes to things like that. Usually we're even getting stuff out of China, usually from people out of like Singapore and Taiwan, and who then have to send it off to everywhere else in the world, because China a lot of times just doesn't bother in that sense. But what I was going to try to say was, on kind of like KT's point, was the hobby, there was a push of trying to make ridiculous, right? You had, even in the hobby itself, Caliburns, Talon Claws, all of this stuff. Then you start seeing name brands like the Nexus Pro, and now the Mark 2, 3, 4, all of these things coming out.
There was a realization that you could start at 150 and start climbing from there.
And there has been a push in the past, and obviously during COVID, there was a massive push in the hobby for the 3D printed stuff. And because everybody had time, and that push went really high up, and everybody kind of found where the limits were at the high end. But then if you've started to notice that even the people who were creating these high end blasters are now starting to get back into just what's interesting, what's more fun, what's more usable, what's quirky and ridiculous. Even companies are starting to kind of get into that. Again, we see it from Nerf. Nerf wasn't really doing a lot of kind of weird, unique designs and stuff. Again, the double punch is a good example of that. You start seeing this. It's everything's kind of ebbs and flows. and the hobby pushed really hard to get high end because there was just 3D printing was more accessible. A lot of people were having time to be able to put into this hobby and into doing this stuff. And
Dart Zone was putting half darts on store shelves.
Right. Half darts became something that was available. Like, there was so much.
It went
much.
From half darts being a rare thing to now it's like everybody's got them. And it's exactly. The main ammo type now.
Yeah. And now it's, but now it's, you know, it's kind of gotten to a point where I think we're on the swing back to just kind of being like, okay, well, what's more fun? And it is kind
well,
of nice
and,
to
and
see
with,
that.
And with the knowledge that we've gained, I think it's good that we've gone through that, because now we're coming back into making this goofy stuff. You don't get something like the slab without having the knowledge gained from this power chase and now getting to apply it to things that are just more silly and fun, because that's a functional blaster that shoots hard and consistently, but it's also like lever action.
Ridiculously
and silly
fun.
And fun.
Yeah. I feel like another good example of like a perfect middle ground would be Taffy's designs.
Oh, God,
like you have stuff like the red herring, like, or like the skewer. Most people, when they think of like what they're going to do for a competitive primary, they don't think, I want a T-pole blaster with zero stock, but it hits like a truck. But Taffy decided that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And you know what? When I tried a skewer, absolutely
well,
love
even,
it. I'm going to get one
we'll come back to that.
It's cool.
But yeah, I was just going to say, even Domachevsky on the absurdity, like you can just make things that are just crazy and just fun for the sake of it. And that's...
And I love it. I absolutely love
stuff
like that.
It's insane and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that Domachevsky's work has a story.
Yeah.
Getting back to like Zombie Strike, right? Like having a backstory that goes with the designs, and so then you get to hold these physical objects in your hand that connect to the story. Beautiful.
Chef's kiss.
The other let's get a really quick version of the answer to this. The second half of that question, where do you see yourself in the hobby in 5 years? I got back into this hobby because I have kids. My kids will be starting to be like in high school and late middle school at that point. So at that point, they're either going to be deep in this hobby or like over it until they're adults. So, it's hard for me to see personally giving it up. I may be in it more as an adult and less as a parent at that point. I don't think I'm ever going to give up my passion for communicating with parents about it, but I may be going to events on my own. Anyone else? Quick answers.
For me, it's kind of impossible to tell. I'm kind of at a turning point in my life. Obviously, I'm 18, time to get a job, it's like that. So it could either go, I will go hardcore into the hobby still, or in 5 years, I may end up not being in it. We'll see. I don't want to leave yet, but it may happen. We don't know.
True.
As far as my case goes, considering the fact at this point, like, I've built my foundation of like my friend groups on a lot of like 2016 ex Nerf tubers and like people in the Nerf hobby and other stuff like that, it's kind of just ingrained in the culture around what I hang out with nowadays. So I even if I don't mod as much, it's kind of like I could go either way. Either I get really back into modding even more and I start modding more, or I mod less. But I love making content, so I still see myself making content, whether it's just occasionally on my YouTube channel or wanting to continue PNNN and staying as like a good, like always there kind of reliable aspect of that. I see myself still making content and still participating in events. The only variable is as to how much more modding I'll be doing by that point is really all I see changing.
That makes sense. Vile?
For me, I am a learner of many things. And the one thing I really love about this hobby is that there is not one particular thing that I can travel down that I can't stop with. If I am interested right now, I've been getting really big into integration work, which is just almost endless what I can make. I'm also a CAD designer and 3D modeler. I can do that work. So I do a lot of 3D printing stuff. I can get into that. I like just modding for the sake of modding, of pushing the limits of blasters or making something just ridiculous. And for me, I don't see myself really changing because I just enjoy what I do. So I think it was one of the only hobbies that I have ever really gotten into that it continues to always pique my interests.
So I think it's because you're the man. Name a career Vile has had it. This is finally a hobby that has so many different things you can do. It fits your persona.
Kind of, yes.
It just kind of combines everything all into one all-encompassing
hobby. A
jack
of all trades is a very, very apt name, I should say,
yeah.
for me.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, moving on. Taylor 2876, CR Nerf, another regular whose support we appreciate a lot. Curious who you guys think will come out on top of the Springer game. Tryon, Harrier, Mark IV, or something else entirely? Question mark. I'm sure it'll all boil down to personal preference, but curious about your thoughts. Take care, and thanks for the show. Thoughts?
I love my Tryon.
I feel like they're all kind of competing in different markets, if that makes any sense.
Price points.
So I think it's not necessarily to say that one will come out on top, but I definitely think, at least for the hobbyists that really want to go ham with their stuff, they're probably just going to stick between the Tryon and the Harrier. Those seem to be the two that have won the hobby's hearts, if you will, when it comes to stuff. So in that aspect, I would say those two are probably the closest winners, in air quotes. But the question,
the unicorn looks promising too.
The unicorn. Yeah. I want to see the unicorn be the one that comes out on top because of how closely it's tied to the hobby and its preferences through the great work.
I definitely want a unicorn. I love how that thing was designed. Like everything about it.
I need that.
And I would also say, for all the things that we've had to say about the Mark IV, again, none of us have one. Barely anybody has this blaster. We know very little about it, really. We basically have Captain Xavier's video to go off of. Like, that's the only real...
I think in my case as well, I'm kind of the, if you will, the black sheep, I guess, of the three of us. I'm very avidly interested in the Mark IV. The only thing restricting me from acquiring one is just my budget.
I mean, that's reasonable.
Honestly, I'd probably have bought one by now otherwise.
To be fair, Grimms is probably the only one here who's large enough to wield one.
I'm very tall, lanky boy.
I'm pretty tall. I
feel like KT could also.
If I could afford every blaster I wanted, I would buy a Mark IV. It looks cool. I really like the sci-fi look of it. I think it has a decent shot. Like, but I don't like if the hobby was going to just pick, if the hobby had to vote to just pick one of the primary class Springers that's on here, I would like it to be the Unicorn. I think it probably would be the Harrier. That would win the vote.
Yeah, that kind of lines up with about where I think as well.
My
Tryon would definitely be a very close contender, but I think the Harrier would ultimately probably win out.
Agreed. Next up, Ghost, another regular contributor. What's up, yo?
Hey.
You have laid the groundwork for a few to come together as a growing community and have been very successful and welcoming in its development. How would you like to see the channel, its community, and more importantly, the PNNN brand grow in the next year?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. It's one of the, how do you see yourself in 5 years question, but
just one
in
year,
a year.
Just 1 year.
2,000 subscriber.
Yes, 2,000. No, I'm gonna go out on like an extra limb. 5,000 subscribers.
That's ambitious.
Unlikely.
That is ambitious.
That's the ambition talking right there. The old, good old YouTube ambition.
I would say for us, in all seriousness, just a good steady progression up. I it would be nice for us to be able to get the podcast actually like, you know, paid for onto these podcast sites, because a lot of people have asked for it, but you know, somebody has to kind of foot the bill for a lot of that. And it's kind of odd to do that. And especially, you know, with everybody here, it would be nice to get to a point where we can do that and make it a little bit more accessible for people who are like, well, I only use, you know, this site or that site. I think that's where I see us, or where I would like us to be going, is just in that direction.
Agreed.
I guess if I'm taking the question seriously, in this case, it's not necessarily so much as an increase in subscriber count. I think that something I would like to see is that as we grow at getting used to this, we can get even faster at doing what we already do, in the sense of we're more efficient with how we're spending our time working on stuff, as well as potentially stuff in the Discord growing, such as if the community grows, potentially getting some good moderators, and also potential people who are willing to step up and potentially help perhaps maybe with script writing or other stuff like that. So that way we can have more input into how the show is made to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
And then the other thing would be, maybe be like at the end of the year, open a Patreon to help fund endeavors.
Yeah, I think in full transparency, I think that's going to be the big, no, it's not too soon to talk about it. I think that's going to be one of the big milestones and one of the big bridges we're going to have to cross and decide what is the place of like PNN having some kind of funding source, a community crowd source. Because, like, we're going to hit the YouTube monetization point at some point, and it's going to be fun to go through that process and click the button that says, yes, give us money. But then we're going to get, like, $5. So, that's not really, like, meaningful, although it's a cool milestone to be able to say, because the limits are 1,000 subscribers, which we're at, and then view hours, which we're definitely going to hit this year if we continue doing what we're doing.
I almost see the, like, funding of the channel thing almost like a sort of Nerf PBS, if that makes sense.
That's the way I'd like.
This is made through contributions by viewers like you. Thank you.
Exactly. I would like to reach a point where it's paying for itself, whether it's like a crowdfunding situation. I mean, it probably.
Yeah, like I don't necessarily want to turn a profit off of this. I just think that it could help fund itself, so that way stuff stays. Like, so that way it's not eating a hole.
Listen, if this could be my job, cool. But I don't expect.
I would literally. I would love that. I would love that.
That would be great. I'm not going to stand here and expect the Nerf community to pay my salary. But like, man, I would love, like, if I felt like this was really valuable, sure, I would.
I'd be willing to go weekly.
So what you're saying is
you
attract the attention of Raid Shadow Legends.
That's a different conversation. I will say one thing I do not want to see for us is sponsorships.
That was a joke.
No, yeah, for sure. I would like to have good relationships. Here's one thing. I'm going to go ahead and say it. One thing that I do see for us is a rebrand, is a rename. Specifically because we have Nerf in our name, and that makes it very difficult to communicate with Dart Zone and Buzzbee and companies that are not Nerf. Just putting it out there. I don't know what that is. We haven't talked about it. I'm throwing it at you in the middle of a podcast. Awkward silence.
KT.
I'm just saying.
He's right, though. KT's right.
I love our name. I love the lightheartedness of it. We have a company name in the name. So, but I think this big question is going to be if we're community funded, and then there's also people, you know, putting community work in. How do we figure those things out? How do we balance those things? Whatever among those things help us put on the best show is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And if we're able,
it's ultimately just about entertaining people and being informative.
If
and
we're
whatnot.
Able to have some kind of funding and the show is able to have a pot of money, and that pot of money is able to pay to put the podcast on actual podcasting platforms in a good way that's really meaningful, upgrade all of our equipment as we go so that we have better, more consistent audio and video. One of the things that's challenging about this show is we don't live in the same place where we can have one studio, get one nice camera and one nice little podcasting setup and do our show. We all have to have our own separate nice setup.
Like KT has his Nerf setup. Yeah. Vile has his Twitch setup. Jolt's literally a guy in his mom's basement. I'm in a bedroom on my family's top floor, just talking to a computer.
I would
screen.
Love to have the money to put into an artist to develop your PingTuber more. How cool would it be to have a wider variety of expressions on your PingTuber? But like,
yeah, that would be.
But
sick.
That's got to be paid work. We have to be paying an artist to do that kind of stuff. And I would love to be able to do that. But like,
costs money.
Yeah, it costs money. But there are things that we could continue to improve in the show that would be really meaningful, I think. So that's our long-winded answer. Thank you for the question, Ghost, and thank you for all your contributions. Basic Nerf, what's up? Asks, how often do our hosts get out and play Nerf Wars? P.S. Congratulations on 1,000 subscribers. Here's to double that and more in the future. How often do we get out to Nerf Wars? I typically go to the wars that Foamdemic puts on down in Massachusetts. Those didn't happen a ton. We did a bunch last year. We have kind of had a gap towards the latter part of the year. But hoping to start up again soon. I made it to Maryland Mayhem. It's kind of random, but the real key thing is I aim to run some smaller events locally. There is literally nothing in my area. I live in northeastern United States, and I say that not to try to obscure the state that I live in. I have a public PO box, but just to say that there's like nothing in Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. I have to drive out of state in order to go to larger events. So I'm hoping to start something here soon, and then hopefully I'll be going more often. Y'all?
I will occasionally, when I can, attend SDNC events. Detroit, not San Diego. I live in Michigan. Pretty great group. Love going there. I actually just went to a park war a couple weeks back. It was a lot of fun. Got to field my try-on.
Sweet. Grim?
Oh, okay. So in my case, it's kind of a little bit, not complicated, just convoluted. In our local area, there wasn't much in the way of clubs for a long time until me and some friends got together and tried to organize stuff to make sure that there was. So I run a server called Kansas Area United Nerf that kind of merges all of the clubs together in a server, so we announce events throughout the state of Kansas and whatnot. And usually once to twice a month I attend a war at a arena that I did a vlog video on that me and my friends built in a friend's backyard that is kind of Thunderdome-esque in its arrangement and whatnot. And then if I have the time to go for a car ride, I go up to Kansas City for the Kansas City Nerf Club. Love those guys. They're really great. They put on really good events that are large scale. And then once per year, I try to get together with my friends like Bobo, the SFI team, and many of my other Nerf family friends and whatnot, and try and get to some large scale event like once a year, like I did last year with Endwar. That's probably not going to happen this year, but hopefully the year after I'll try and do that again.
Cool.
And that's kind of the situation of how I foam fling.
Sweet. Vile?
I haven't actually been to an event in years now, like 2 years, probably. I'm actually local to Foam Blast, and I'm hoping that when they are fully, and we did talk about it a little bit, but hopefully when they are completely done with closing up, you know, the Foam Blast shop, they might be able to start running events, and I've even offered to help. So hopefully when that comes around, I'll be able to start actually nerfing again. So I'm actually currently building blasters because they are a much lower FPS compared to San Diego, which is a much, much higher FPS range. So I have to now build blasters accordingly. So
it's kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum. You got like the Pacific like end where it's like min-maxing, and then over here it's a lot more goofy fun near 100 FPS or whatever.
Yeah. It was San Diego was like 230, and so I built everything for like 220, 230 range, and then I get here to around Foam Blast, and their local games were 130, all 100 FPS lower, and I'm like, oh god, I've built everything to be overpowered.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay, next up, Space Shuttle 007 asked, what's up, yo? Asked, how did you four get to be the crew?
Oh, that's actually an interesting story, since I can probably explain this rather well.
Yeah, go for it.
So as this started, way back when Nerf News was being done by Jangular, I used to occasionally contribute with leaks that I found and whatnot. So for a long time, it's been in the back of my brain that I wanted to do the Nerf News. And then it kind of, I tossed around the idea when Foam Blast originally announced that they'd stop doing Twin for the foreseeable future. Nothing really came of it. And then fast forward to around November, I tossed the idea around again. Drac had recently started, or I think he may have, I can't remember if he had started or he was in preparation of starting his own Nerf News.
I don't think he had started yet.
And then, essentially what happened was, I had gotten talked to some other NerfTubers up at Flux Labs, and it had been kind of confirmed that nobody other than maybe Drac had a mind to, at the time, potentially be doing a Nerf News show. Fast forward a little later, Some people found that I was interested in it, and they're like, yo, you should totally do that. We'd absolutely support you. And so I start talking to Jolt, because I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do this alone. I'd like your help. And then we got to talking, started figuring stuff out, and then we were like, well, two guys isn't necessarily enough, so why don't we ask Vile? Because we were both patrons of his Discord server, and we hung out there a lot, and we really enjoyed it. We're like, Vile would be a perfect fit for the news. Vile said yes, and then we started talking about it since the three of us were staff in Vile's server and Vile's staff chat. Fast forward a little later, KT sees us talking about it, is like, hey, I want in. And we're like, we absolutely love you as a guy. Absolutely. Join us. And yeah.
The rest is
so
history.
Yeah, pretty much the rest is history. We started planning, and we were preparing for our debut pilot episode in January, the second week of January. And so we had basically been planning, and the official, I guess, inception and true launch of PNNN started mid-November. Yeah. So we've actually been working on getting this thing going for over half a year now at this point. And it's really cool to see the fruits of everyone's labor and how much effort everyone, especially like just you three as well, just how much effort you guys put into this. And I couldn't have helped in the process of like finding a better group of people. Like the fact that this works as well as it does, I just couldn't be more happy with how it came
Agreed.
Out.
I think this is a really, really awesome team.
KT is the MVP. KT does so much work.
It is very much
more
a
than
very
the rest
much
of us.
An MVP.
And also, for the record, KT, the podcast is KT's idea. This is KT's baby.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The podcast was, he literally came in and he was like, I want in. But can we also do a podcast?
So I had actually, like, I had, before I knew about the news show, I had already, because Grims and I weren't quite as close as, we just hadn't connected quite as much.
I think we had just
much.
Exchanged words at the time.
Well,
and
we were both on,
Vile's
staff, yeah, and so, like, we had engaged in more, like, a professional way at the time, but, like, I had already had the idea of asking Jolt and Vile to do a podcast with me. And then I was like, oh, well, the three of them are doing a news show. Well, wait, what if there was a podcast and it was a partner to the news show? And so we could do the news show and then we could just like chat about the news and like that could be cool, right? And so, yeah, we just sort of mushed it all together.
Yeah.
And here we are.
I will go on the record to say that I've talked to Jolt about this. We had some organization before KT joined. But the formation of what our structure is today didn't happen till KT got here. And I don't think we would have lasted had KT not joined the crew.
Aww.
It would have like either not been as good or it just would have fizzled out somehow. And so KT definitely is a massive, massive just contributor Aww. To everything being where it is.
Now. MVP,
thank you, y'all.
No
I
contest.
I do my best. I do my best. I'm really happy to contribute. I'm really proud of what we've done. I think that, yeah, I think we're doing really meaningful work for the hobby, and I'm glad that people are enjoying it. I will also say, we sell this story a lot, but the super short version, is that Vile and I actually go way back, nearly a decade, right?
Oh, a little over it now.
Back to the chiptune scene where we both were, I was in a Game Boy rock band. And doing solo music with banjo and horn players and Game Boys, and I was modding my own Game Boys to do it. And Vile was in that hobby scene doing pretty sick Game Boy mods. And so we encountered each other there long before we either got into this hobby and then lost track of each other. And then suddenly we're in the same hobby again, but it was a different hobby and it was Nerf. And we sort of rediscovered each other here. And which is how I wound up getting close with Jolt and how I wound up meeting Grims.
And I saw KT's like profile pic because it was the same one.
Yeah.
From
I was still
the
using
chiptune.
The little horn guy from Gargantuan Acoustic Locator.
Yep. And I was like, wait a minute, I know that. And I was like, hey, because I remember I was like, we were both on the same one. I remember this. And I had gotten into chip music at one point because I just like getting into everything and working with my hands and building stuff. But I also did a lot of audio, and it's just really funny to randomly stumble across somebody else from the interwebs from a completely different hobby all over again in a new hobby, and like, you know, that far along, like it, because it was about 10 years at the time when we met each other back again, because that was right around 2020 ish.
Yeah,
like it, because we were roughly 2019 2020 ish.
Well, because I was also, my Twitch channel, I was streaming music, but I was also streaming Nerf stuff and Lego stuff, and so we were the only two people streaming Nerf modding on Twitch, and I don't really do that on Twitch anymore, but
sadness.
You know,
I know, it's kind of cool, just, you guys,
you know, I'm struggling with that, because it's like, I want, on one hand, I want my Twitch channel to be like, I would love to just run my channel all day and be like, I'm in my workshop, I'm Nerf modding, oh, now we're doing Lego stuff, now I'm fixing my car, like, whatever, and now, oh, someone requested a song, boom, we're going to the music setup, we're playing music for a while. You know, I'd love to be able to just, like, have it be, like, almost like a lifestyle stream, but, like, I don't actually have the energy for that.
It takes a lot.
Yeah. I would say it's kind of cool with how you and Vile went out, though, about stuff, because it's kind of like, you guys both took out your boats off the island and went out to sail at sea and rode your own waves, and then you somehow ended up on the same island together once again. Yeah. It's just like, it's been a long time, but hey, I know you. It's real
for
cool.
For me and Grimms, it was that we've been friends since, what was it, summer of last year?
August, something like that, because I had been aware of Grim Reaper for a long time, and then we became friends and then met each other at Endwar. I remember seeing a video on Grim's channel at the time about Vile's streams, and I had seen that they interacted a lot in Mr. Nathan's server and other places. I was like, oh, this is someone they think is really cool. Let's go check them out. Checked out Vile's stream. Absolutely loved it, because it reminded me of my good buddy Bobo's old live streams that he used to do. Go sub to Bobo Lolo, by the way. It was just kind of like, this is really cool. It's nice seeing people modding on Twitch. So I joined the Discord, started hanging out, somehow became staff, and here we are.
Somehow became staff is the best part there.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm going to leave the details really vague on that one. It's an interesting story, but not for the podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I should have left that question for the end. That would have been a really good ending question, I realized, looking up at our last two questions, which are great questions. Great questions, but I should have left that one to the end. It's fine. Life goes on.
Yeah.
Banshee Indian asks, wasn't Banshee Indian a...
Banshee is the one with the really awesome leather. Picked him for...
Yeah, Banshee is a...
There we go. Thank you. I was like, didn't they have a mod spotlight? Yeah.
Banshee is a very cool kindred soul. I absolutely love that guy. He's awesome.
Dude. Congrats. Is there a hobby side blaster or creator that you don't think gets the attention it/they deserve? If you could have one wish for one blaster to exist from a foam genie, what would it be? And why would it be a hobby grade vortex blaster? Not wrong. Not wrong.
No.
I would definitely
be wrong. There,
that's actually a really cool wish.
That is a pretty cool one.
I will start this off and say my pick for a creator in the hobby who does not get enough attention would be Marcus Close, aka Foam Blasted. We got to interview Anthony Maritime Foam. He was working together with Marcus on the wrist mounted Mega XL gauntlet, which Anthony's about to ship mine. I'm very excited about this.
You did buy one.
Of course I did. Yeah, I got one of the pre-orders. He did it, and he let me pick the colors among the like colors that he had. Marcus does stuff that not only fulfills the spirit of Nerf, but makes really like forgotten products interesting again.
Oh, yes.
One of the first things that I got to play around with Marcus was I had done a video where I took two rough cuts, and this was a video about the Flip 32.
Oh, I just took
two rough cuts. Actually, initially I did the Flip 16 one where I didn't want to buy a Flip 16, but I made a video about it where I just took two rough cuts and taped them together and flipped them. And then I did another one where I took four rough cuts, and I put them together, and I made a Flip 32, quote unquote, by doing the thing. Anthony did something similar in a video, and then Marcus was like, well, wait, what if we actually made like a rail attachment for them and you could actually attach them together? And so he just cracked this out in like a day. And yep. and now I still have two rough cuts like attached with these 3D printed things that are specifically made for it. He made replacement clips for the battle. Is it the battle scout? Yeah, he made replacement clips for the battle scout, and he, on my request, made a version that I could brass. And so I now have a brassed battle scout clip, which is just the funniest thing.
There's
a real performance boost. It doesn't have the hugest plunger tube, but you get more out of it with a better barrel.
What I love is how he makes parts for blasters that you would never think to make parts for. Like, nobody else is going to touch the Ranger PD-5.
Yeah, exactly. I love it so much. Yeah. All right, what else y'all got? What do y'all think?
My first thought would be to say, like, the stereotypical haha time to funny shill would to say SFI or Karma Mile Designs Taffy, because I both love the stuff they make, but they already have a lot of recognition.
I was gonna say, if you had asked me a little while back, I would have said Taffy, but thankfully I think Taffy is getting a lot of well-deserved recognition.
The reason I almost would have said SFI is because they're working on designing their own blasters, but they don't get as much attention.
Regardless,
my actual more serious answer would be Shanye, actually. Mm. They've done some really cool stuff, whether it be the Leaf, the lever action kits for the Saturn, and the
I use my lever action Saturn at the HVZ at... I may honestly make a whole video just of lever action Saturn footage, because that thing was just so much fun.
Yeah. And then the thing that I'm actually absolutely smitten with that they made is the Easier Prime knockout kits. So they have a variety of knockout kits that take magazines. Some are bolt action, some are others. But this one takes Nightingale mags. And basically how it works is just by priming the bottom thing, a bolt cycles to chamber the darts when you're priming the takedown. So you don't have to chamber a dart. It auto chambers.
What? I have not seen this.
It auto chambers.
That is
so
rad.
All you have to do is pump the bottom, the little lever, and it comes with a carbon fiber stock, a barrel, it has its own breech system and whatnot.
Okay,
and it auto
I'm sold.
After you
except I'm broke,
that.
So I will never buy one. But
It's pricey, but it's really innovative, really cool. And as a guy who used to use a knockout as a primary, it's just so cool.
Yeah, that sounds
so cool.
So freaking
I could
awesome.
Go I could go on I could go on ad nauseum about
That's
it.
That's pretty sick.
So I'm just gonna stop myself there with that one.
Vile, what you got?
I have to say one because it's personal. Iron Gopher. And the only reason why, so Gopher's not as he's primarily posts, I think, on like Reddit and
Instagram
Instagram. That those are like the two primary places. The reason why is because the amount of knowledge that Gopher has given me personally for like integration work and like problem solving of a lot of things, learning like what are better ways to do stuff is just, it's immeasurable the amount of stuff I have learned from Gopher. In particular, especially on like my streams. Gopher's even posted a lot of stuff in my Discord. I'm not plugging my Discord or anything, but
you should totally go there.
You should
though.
Totally go there. The reason why is we have the spot that you can post you know, about like crafts and stuff like that. And Gopher went through this entire like month of posting these little videos about painting techniques, why certain painting techniques work better, what epoxies do, like what certain tools do, what tools are better at what, like it was just like, you can't really measure that amount of work and the amount of time to learn all of these processes. And
yeah,
you know, that to me is like one of the biggest ones. Cause a lot of times, you know, sure, you might go to YouTube or you might find someone else who made a mod and they might've used something, and sure, it may have looked good in photos, or maybe it looked fine, or it sort of worked. Sometimes it cracks after a few uses, or it breaks after this, or the paint wrinkles and you don't know why. And the amount of knowledge that he has to be able to really convey, this is why you do it, this is where it works better, and trust me, it you know, this is why you want to do it that way. And it just makes these absolutely solid builds. And obviously it was featured on Twins channel, like their news on multiple times for builds. I got to see one of his builds over there when I went to help out Foam Blast, because he sent them one of his builds, which is the Tiamat. He actually sent me Sunlance. I have Sunlance, and it's incredible. I love the work. I love it. It's the like weathering techniques are really impressive to see. And yeah, that's
I have
for
a hot
me.
Shock and a Reflex 6 from him. I can confirm they are incredible. Gopher is a master of his art.
He seems like one of our holders of deep knowledge.
Yeah.
Yes, Gopher is an amazing guy.
Yeah, there's a few people in the hobby that are like that, and Gopher is definitely one of those to me. Definitely holds on to a lot of knowledge, and it's nice that he shares that, you know, in our community. So
I think he really exemplifies this thing that is easy to forget, that people who create videos on YouTube are very important part of communicating information about the hobby, but on a platform like that, where you are to some degree beholden to an algorithm, if you want people to actually see your content, you are never going to be able to get deep enough into the topics that are important to really doing, to really like going further with a hobby like this. Like, generally speaking, you have to build personal relationships and really get in and get to know people and have people like Iron Gopher that are willing to share that knowledge with the community. So hats off, absolutely, to Iron Gopher. Great. Glad to have you around. Jolt, you got one?
That's a tough one. Like, in terms of like people who design stuff, I'd say a couple ones that stand out to me will be like Alex Detroit Dartworks. And
that was the first thing that came to mind when I thought.
And OFD, obviously. Old Fusion Designs. Both of them make some pretty cool stuff. OFD obviously is getting a lot of attention now for the fly core and all of that stuff, which is awesome. Alex made the AccuNub P-Car, which is really nice. I have one for my Tryon. They work pretty well. Both of them make some pretty interesting things, and I think they're both worth a look.
Our last question, and actually this is a fun question to ask on, M Swampert EX, which, as a Pokemon TCG player, I really appreciate that. I don't think...
Yeah, that I was like, that's pretty
cool. I don't think Swampert had a Mega Evolution. Wait! Oh, it did!
It did.
It did have a Mega...
It did. My brother had that one.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay, what's its attack? No, I don't want a strong arm impact. 130 plus, you may do 30 more damage if you do discard the top three cards.
What are you even talking about?
Sorry.
We're talking about the Pokemon trading card game.
KT's going into a TCG lore right now.
Yeah. Stay out of it. My brother had that card, and that was his main line card for his deck. I remember facing that one in many a battles in my middle school years.
Y'all nerds.
I literally came to this recording session from a Pokemon TCG tournament. It was very small. We were playing Gym Leader Challenge, a new format, which I highly recommend if you're into the TCG or you've ever been into the TCG. Check out Gym Leader Challenge. If you have a box of cards lying around that you haven't paid attention to in years, this could get you back into it. I swear it is the most fun way to play the game. Anyway, Mega Swampert EX here asks, favorite blasters?
Recon.
I was going to say, hey, Jolt King 627, what's your favorite blaster?
It's the Recon.
Okay. Who else wants to go?
Yeah, I mean, my choices are fairly obvious, since I already said them earlier in the video. The main two, of course, being the Longshot and the Raven, and then the two after that by proxy, mostly due to familiarity, would be the Strife and the Modulus. Modulus being my first flywheel, or ECS-10, I should specify. Was my first flywheel blaster, so that holds a place in my heart. But mainly Raven, mainly Longshot, so that means that includes all the derivatives, like especially stuff like the X-Zeus and X-Zeus 2 and other stuff, and yada, yada, yada. You get the idea.
I think I would have to... Currently, the Skewer still holds an extremely special place in my heart.
Ah, if we're talking hobby, I would definitely say Skewer.
I adore mine. Many of you know my kid... built one, age 11. Mm-hmm. First blaster they've built. I have one that I built. It's the first 3D printed blaster I built. I have one that I got from Foamdemic, and I have the one my kids built. I would also put my lever action Saturn in there just because I've had so much fun every time I take it out. It's just one of the most fun blasters that I have to play with. Bile?
Okay. Standard, like, simple modded blasters.
Just your Kronos. Favorite blaster. Don't overthink it, man. Don't overthink
okay,
it.
Okay, here. Kronos. Okay. But mega modded rivals. Just, I gotta say it. And
you and your stinking mega smart AR.
You shut your mouth. It's magnificent, mega.
Man.
Mega, I swear, I've watched this man make like 10 of these things on screen. Yeah,
I wish I had like a tutorial so I could learn
how to work on it. I'm trying to get to this point. I promise. I promise.
He'll
and
never do it.
I might edit said tutorial.
No, I'm gonna get to it. It's on the docket. Uh-huh. I promise.
Uh-huh.
This has been a running joke since podcast one, by the way.
Shut up.
Yes, it has.
It's been a joke since before that. What are you talking about?
If it was community one, to be honest, my Luchadora is one of my favorites to show off. So it has become my go-to for grabbing to show people about the hobby. Just because it's the like easiest, weirdest, fastest shooting blaster I have. So for like, as a community built one.
Cool. I'm terminally watching Vile's streams, so I have seen him pull that out on like a dozen occasions.
It's yeah, true. Totally.
Yeah,
someone
same.
Comes into the stream who's not familiar and they show interest, and you got to have something to be like, "This is what it, this is what it's all about." Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right. I see Jolt in the text chat. Did we already do Maritime Foam's comment? Yes, but let's say it again. Maritime Foam says, "Woo! Congrats! Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate you.
We appreciate it.
Yes.
thank you."
And with that, we've been recording for over 2 hours. I don't think
it's 11 o'clock at night for me, and like midnight
for midnight.
I have enough time left to eat my hot glue.
It is. It is not going to be a 2-hour podcast, but it's going to be pretty close. And you know what? That's fine. We're celebrating 1,000 subscribers. We're celebrating 10 episodes. There's a lot of good.
All.
I hope that y'all really enjoy the Q&A. Thank you all so much for your questions.
Yes.
Anybody got anything else to say?
Eating hot glue.
Time flies when you're having fun, you know? Didn't realize how long we'd been doing this for at this point.
Yeah, it feels like only yesterday that Grims and I were talking about doing this.
I can literally, like, recall the conversation, and it feels like it was just yesterday.
Yep. 5 months, 10 episodes. Here's the thing, though. My friend that I talk about, Jonathan Mann, writes a song every day. He's been doing it for over 5,000 days. When we did Song 5,000, it was a huge, huge, huge production. We put a ton of time into it. And the main thing, and the thing that I said to him after we were done with all of it was, see you on Song 5001, because we'll see you in 2 more weeks. We're not, you know, this is exciting.
See
you on episode 11, because there's more, the news doesn't stop.
More hot glue to eat.
Never stop coming.
Yep.
Always more
check
news.
Check out our socials.
Check out our socials. Yep. The link's in the description.
Also, buy stuff from Silver Fox Industries, please.
Okay, Mr. Shield.
Let them know I sent you.
Hey, shout out to Taffy, who's supposed to help me get a red herring, because I really, really want a red herring. I'm tired. Good night.
That sounds good.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
And stop.